Hello and welcome to another episode of the Side by Side ATC podcast. I'm Tom Haynes, your host, and today I'm going to spend, probably quite a while. Some of you may think it's too long, but I'm going to spend some time with tales from the Academy. So I'm going to tell stories. Hopefully I will redact the names if I remember to. But I will tell you, my 5 years as an instructor at the Academy were often funny, unfortunately often sad, but it was an amazing time up there. I wouldn't trade it for anything, and I appreciate a lot what you students who are at the Academy, what you're trying to accomplish. It's not an easy thing. And one of the things that I thoroughly enjoyed about the Academy was getting to know the students. It was a little more difficult to do that when you're just working in the labs with the students. You don't get quite as much time to get to know them, but you see them fairly regularly. And, you know, I've had some extremely funny things happen just being a part of the lab with the students. And so hopefully we'll get into that, and hopefully you guys will like it. Hopefully you'll get something out of this that you can use for your time and your interaction with the instructors. So one thing to remember about the instructors is when we get there, even though, like, I had gotten there, I had 17 years at Fort Worth Center, and so I had a lot of experience. I had only been retired for about a year and a half, so it's not like it had been a long time since I had worked. But when I got there on a Monday, they had me, you know, just kind of walk around. They had me sit in on a class, so I did sit in on one of the classrooms. And then towards the end of the week, they got me into what they called the mini lab and had me work as the D-side, as the radar associate. And so I got to meet a couple of very interesting individuals who had a wonderful time laughing at me. Yes, laughing at me. As things were going through the scenario we were running, I would start to do something, and the guy that was watching me, the instructor that was watching me, would go, "No, you can't do that. No, you can't do it that way. No, we don't do it that way. No, we don't do it that way." And they were having a great time. They were laughing their arses off. And so I wasn't feeling very good, because I'm like, you know, I know how to do this, but I had to learn the Academy way of doing it and the actual textbook way of doing it, which, as you get to other facilities, you'll understand it's not always done exactly by the textbook. So I did feel a little bit better that afternoon when a guy that I had actually worked at Fort Worth Center with, we had been the same specialty, same crew even. He had gotten there a week before I did, and he got to run a problem, and we all got to laugh at him. So it was a lot of fun, even from the very beginning. But so we get certified in the radar, being a radar instructor, and then we get to start interacting with you guys, the students. And that is quite an experience. It really is. You can tell just what it means to you guys. You can tell how much time and effort and energy you're putting into it. And it's amazing to watch. Especially, you know, initially I was only working in the radar lab, and it was amazing to watch students come in the first night or day of the radar lab and the first problem and watch them struggle in most cases with just about everything, to then getting to watch them that last week when they're running the 11 problems and running the 12 problems and running traffic at a level that you're going to see on the evaluations. And to watch those same students who were stumbling and bumbling and, you know, like they were in a dark room trying to find their way out sometimes. And then at the end, actually working traffic, working everything that got thrown at them in the scenario, understanding what they were doing and why they were doing it, understanding how to do it, how to say it, all the computer entries, all the strip marking. It was amazing to see the transformation that happens over those 3-4 weeks that you have in the radar lab. And then we'll come back and I'll tell some stories from the radar lab. But then after a few months, they offered up the opportunity for me to go and learn how to do non-radar instructing. And I was like, oh, sounds good to me. I never liked non-radar. I actually worked at a non-radar approach control. That's what Brownsville was when I first went down there. But non-radar at the academy is a different thing. And so we went through a class. I think there were 6 of us. And one main instructor. And he went through, the first week was basically telling us, going through the lessons and stuff like that. Very similar to what you guys take, what, three weeks to go through. We went through it in a week. And then we ran all 27 scenarios the next week. And so you weren't running all of them. Sometimes you were remoting, sometimes you were running it as the controller. But we went through every scenario. And I will tell you, I came out a couple of nights and my brain hurt. So I understand what it's like to go through that. And I had 17 years of center experience, 26 years total experience, and it was still hurting my brain. So I understand what it is like to try and go through that with little or no experience. And it is amazing that you guys get through it as well as you do. So that started my non-radar career, if you want to call it that. And it was probably about 6 months later that they asked me if I wanted to be an A-lead. And so I had never taught in a classroom before. Public speaking was never really my strong point. I kind of got some training on that by being a soccer coach and being the head of soccer for a homeschool organization that our daughters were a part of. And so I was head of soccer and got to be a soccer coach. And then we also did a break in between our, in the middle of our practices. And so I got up and got to speak to all the kids that were playing. And a lot of the parents started coming around and spending some time listening. And so that was really my first foray into any kind of public speaking. So for me to get into a classroom was kind of a stretch, out of my comfort zone a little bit. But then once I started doing it and getting to interact with the students and getting to be there with them every day instead of just in the the radar or non-radar labs, that was a game changer for me. I loved it. I fell in love with being an A-lead and getting to be a part of the experience that the students had at the academy. Now, the upside of that is you get to celebrate with them when they pass. The downside is if they don't pass, you forge a bond with them, even if it's just, you know, 5 days a week in class. You get to know them, you care about them, and it hurts when they don't make it. It hurts when you see how much work they've done and they don't make it. And I've seen students who failed by one single point. I've seen students fail by 2 points on the last run. I've seen students fail by 5 points on that last run. I've seen a student who was going to fail by 5 points on the last run. We got him to file a TR, a technical review of the problem, and he got 16 of those points back. So he ended up passing by 11 points. So it's a very emotional time. There are some leads and A-leads who take leave those last 2 days. I never could do that. I wanted to be there. I wanted to offer any encouragement I could. The company that hires the instructors doesn't really allow any interaction with the students those last 2 days. So they don't allow it, but I've actually interacted with some of the students on those last 2 days. I've had an FA supervisor see that interaction. I've had called him over, talked to him about what we were talking about. We were not talking about anything technical about the run that she had just done. We were just talking about emotions and things like that. And he was very supportive of me taking that time to do that. And so it's a amazing world being an instructor at the academy. I would, like I said, I would never trade that for anything. Thoroughly enjoyed my time there, and like I said, there are some serious, very serious highs and some very serious lows. So enough about my time. Let's get into some stories. So I want to tell you about a class that hopefully will be a good example for you guys who are going through the academy, and hopefully you catch this fairly early in the academy, because I want to kind of give you an example of how a class can come together and stay together all the way through. Actually, a couple of examples, but the first example was I was an A-lead for this class, and it was a really good class. I think we had 18, and I'm pretty sure we got either 14 or 15 of them through. We almost got the whole class through. And at the time, that just wasn't done. But it was an incredible class. We had a young lady who, I think her non-radar evals were 197. And after the second run, I looked at her and said, "So how'd you do?" She goes, "Well, I got a 97. And she goes, "Do you think I should file a TR? And I did. I laughed. I had to laugh. I said, "No." I said, "Take that 100, take that 97, and run as fast as you can out of the building when they let you, so that they don't come back and change those scores." Okay? So, but she was a very integral part of what ended up happening later on. So she was number one in the class going into the radar evals. And it was tough. The competition up at the top of that class was amazing. There were four or five that were going to be in the very high 90s, so it was going to be above 95 for the top four or five in that class, if I remember right. And so we had one guy that was fourth in the class. Well, before we get to the evals, let me tell you a story that happened probably about a week and a half before we got to evals. So in the radar lab, they'll offer you some Jackson arrivals that are at flyvol 240, and they are requesting lower, and they're over the sector that's by you. And a lot of students will go out and get control of the guy instead of calling, instead of sending a PVD and doing a point out, which is what has to happen, because that guy at flyvol 240 is not in that sector, that sector's airspace. And so, you know, we had signs at the time, we had signs all over the breakout room that says, don't get control at flyvol 240 and all this. Well, I was in the breakout room with half the students. So half the students are in there while half the students are running a problem. And the students that had just finished running the problem, they started trickling in, and a lot of them were laughing. And I'm like, okay, what happened? And they said, well, one of the instructors, apparently, this guy who we'll call Alex, got control of a guy at flyvol 240. And his instructor goes, Alex, real loud, Alex, you know we don't get control at flyvol 240. And I mean, they're laughing, they're giving this guy a hard time. And so I just look at him and I go, you know, I think it might be time for an intervention. And he did not hesitate. He gets up, walks in front of the class, and goes, hi, my name is Alex, and it's been 6 minutes since I last got control of a guy at flyvol 240. And the whole class goes, hi, Alex. And I mean, the whole class is bust out laughing. And so I went home, and I'm telling my wife this after the class was over. And she goes, well, you need one of those signs that they have in warehouses and stuff, number of days since an accident, stuff like that. She goes, you need one of those for a number of days since you've gotten control at flyvol 240. And I was like, oh, that is brilliant. I cannot believe I did not think of that. So I was a little upset, but it was a brilliant idea. And so the next morning, I go in before anybody else is there, and I write up on the whiteboard behind the little table that I would sit at. I said, days since last getting control at flyvol 240, and there was a blank space before that, and I put a big zero. And so over the next few days, we would change that when we got through the day and we didn't get control at flyvol 240, we would change it and we would all celebrate as a class. Well, we got to six, and we got there because it didn't come up again. And that's what the FAA does. They give you things, and then it doesn't come up again. They let you forget about them. And so it came up again. And sure enough, I would say half the class got control of flyvol 240. So I was in the radar lab with them, and I was really wanting to rush back before any of them could get to the board, because I didn't want the other half of the class to know what was coming up. And by the time I got back to the breakout room, oh, it was too late. They'd already changed it from 6 to 0. And so we had a good laugh at that. Okay, so that class gets to their radar evaluation days, which have got to be two of the most stressful days you'll ever face. Because it's a job or it's not a job at the end of it. And so there's a lot riding on it. And so this young lady that was number one in the class going into it, she wanted to stay number one because she wanted a certain facility. And she wasn't going to get her first choice because it wasn't on the list, but she wanted to make sure she got the next facility. Well, she had a really bad run. She actually did get control of a guy at flyvol 240, so it ended up being a separationer. and it knocked her down to, I want to say, fourth. The guy that was fourth that I told you about, he got 100, 100, and a 97 on his three runs. So he ended up first in class, and he went to Houston Center. And so after all the runs are done, and the students who had not passed, I think it was about three, they had already left. And so the rest of the class is in the breakout room, kind of celebrating and also trying to figure out who was going where. And there were two spots at Houston. And so this kid that we named Alex earlier, he's up at the board, and he's got the locations for that were on the list. Actually, I think he had everybody's initials. And then he wrote in, you know, the top guy was going to Houston, next guy was going here. And so third wasn't sure where he was going. And I'm at the back of the classroom by the door by now. And this guy, Alex, looks at him. And I'm watching all this. He looks at him, and the guy just shakes his head. And so Alex writes in Houston Center for the young lady. And I think it ended up being L.A. Center for the young man. And sorry, it's still kind of emotional to think about, because he knew what she wanted, and he knew that he had an opportunity to give it to her and to sacrifice so that she could have it. And she looked at him and said, "Are you sure? And don't do this for me." And he's like, "I'm sure." And so I actually had to leave the room to compose myself and then come back in. But that was one of the closest classes I have ever seen. They went through there, they went through a lot, and yet they came out at the end of it a close-knit group. And so that is an example of what you need at the academy. There are sayings that whatever you think you can achieve alone, you can achieve a hundred times that with other people. I'm paraphrasing it. If you want, you can attribute it to me, because I think I paraphrased it enough that no one will care. But if you think you're going to be a lone wolf and go through the academy, you might be able to do it, but it's just so much easier if you get with your classmates and you become teammates and you go through this incredibly difficult thing together. So that's one class. Another class, we actually came within, I think, 7 or 10 points of getting all 12. There were only 12 in that class. We came within just an eyelash of getting all 12 through, and that was unheard of at the time. We had two that didn't pass. One didn't pass by 2 points, and I think one didn't pass by 5 points. And I will say this, the one that didn't pass by 5 points, it was probably a good thing, because, I mean, he was nervous. He was sweating profusely all the time. So I think there may have been a better career for him. But we also, the reason I bring this class up is there was a student in there that no one expected to pass. He didn't expect to pass. He had a job lined up for the next Monday, because he did not expect to pass. He passed by 2 points. And he did not pass because of any of his instructors, whether the lab instructors. He did not pass because of me. I was the A lead. He did not pass because of the lead. He passed because one of his classmates dragged him across the finish line. He would spend so much extra time during breaks going over things with him. He literally p- picked him up and carried him across that finish line and got him to pass. It was the most amazing thing I'd seen. And, you know, again, that is what you can accomplish with more than just yourself. It was very easy for that student who was doing the carrying and the dragging. It was easy for him to pass. He was getting so much out of training his friend and his buddy. And so, again, and if you're at the academy, I guarantee you, you've already heard it from your lead and A-lead. You've heard it from anyone you work with in the labs. You have to study together. You have to become a unit as a class. It's your only chance to get everyone across that line. Okay? So, trying to remember which stories that I already told as part of the podcast, but if you ever knew me, you'll know that I tell the same stories all the time. So, we had the same class that we got 10 out of 12. They were in the non-radar portion. I think their CKT1 was coming up, and the lead was going over some review with them. And one of the FAA supervisors walked in the door, and no one noticed, so the lead is still doing the review for the test, which is not really on the curriculum, if you want to call that. It's not a lesson that we normally teach, but it's something that most leads will do. And he finally noticed that the guy was there, and so he stopped and he closed his little book that had his review stuff in it, and we all looked up, and the students turned around, and you know, he said, "Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to look in and see how y'all were." And so the lead was, you know, very much like, "Oh, we're doing great. We're just doing some studying." And he said, "Okay, I'll leave you to it." And he walked out and left. And so the lead kind of looks at the students and says, "Hey, you know, if you see a guy from the FAA around, you need to let us know. You know, don't just let him stand there. Let us know." And so nothing happened with that class. And I'm telling this story to another class after that. And so this other class, it's towards the end. I think it was actually after their last eval. And that same FA supervisor and I are standing in the doorway to the breakout room. And there are a couple of guys in the classroom. And they look at me, and I look at them, and they go, "Kaka!" real loud. And I'm like, "Really, guys? I'm standing here talking to him, and now you warn me?" And so I started telling that story to other classes, because these stories just grow and grow and grow. And so I told that story to another class, and they started, anytime they would see a FAA person, and whether it was an evaluator or anybody, they would yell, "Kaka!" And so they'd see this one, and it happened to this one evaluator. He was also from Forest Center, and I had worked with him. And they saw him a lot, and they would yell, "Kaka!" and then duck back into the room so he couldn't see who did it. And it really started bothering him, which, of course, you know, made me want them to do it more. That's just the personality I have. So they did this, they did this, they did this. And I'm relaying this even to my supervisors with SAIC. And I even got one of the supervisors. He'd walk into one of the labs or he'd walk into a room and he would announce it himself. He'd go, "Kaka!" And so everybody was having a great time with it. So my theory, one of my theories about the Academy is you learn more, you retain more when you can make it fun, when you can make it interesting. In non-radar, when a pilot calls up on initial contact, you have to identify yourself. And a lot of students would skip that. And so I have a song on my phone. And when we were doing something like this in the classroom, if anybody didn't identify themselves, I would play "Who Are You" by The Who. And I would play that long intro really loud. And it's just my phone. It wasn't over the speakers, so it wasn't too bad. Didn't interrupt any of the other classes. But the students got to where they hated it because it got played quite a bit. Well, they stopped not identifying themselves, which was the whole point. I always wanted to give you something memorable that when it came down to those 3 days, the non-radar evals and then the 2 days of the radar evals, that there would be something in your head that you would remember and that would be really easy to remember. And it's amazing how much more we remember when there's a good memory that we can associate with it. You know what I mean? It lasts longer. And so that was what I tried to do as an instructor. That's what a lot of the instructors will try to do up there. I've had so many students. I had one in non-radar that was having a hard time with the strip marking and all of that. And he's like, "But I know that I had the right restriction." And I said, "Well, look at it this way. If you're trying to figure out who murdered someone," I know it's kind of graphic, but if you're trying to figure out who murdered someone and you know who did it, but you don't have any evidence, what are you going to do? And he looked at me and he, with a little puzzled look on his face, and he goes, "Do you know what I did before I came here?" And I was like, "No, I have no idea. It wasn't my class, so I didn't know much about him. I was just working with him in the lab." He said, "Well, I was a policeman." He said, "I understand full well that you have to have evidence." And I was like, "Well, that's what the strip marking is." And as far as I know, he didn't have a problem with strip marking after that, because he understood why it was important. I can't tell you how many times something like that has happened. Just, you know, I believe that the information has been given to me for a reason, and that is to help the student. And so that's what I like to do. I grew up playing soccer. I grew up playing sports, baseball, volleyball. I got into bowling, golf, you name it, I would try it. But I mainly played soccer. And so I used a lot of sports analogies. And a lot of times I would ask a student, "Hey, do you play sports?" And I had one in radar that was, she would hesitate giving a clearance, hesitate doing stuff, because she wasn't sure. And I said, did you play sports in college? She said, "I played softball." And I said, "Well, okay, picture that you're up in the bottom of the seventh inning. Bases are loaded. Your team's down a run. Are you going to go up as the batter and let that pitcher throw three balls at you and not swing? And she said, no way. And I said, well, then swing. When you're at the academy, when you're in any of the practice scenarios, non-radar, radar, it doesn't matter. Swing. Take a chance. Be willing to be wrong. But do it. And do it with authority. Do it and say it as if you knew exactly what you were doing. I had a student who, in non-radar, arrival into Greenwood, you have to call a sector and get them to block airspace. He had not done that. I hadn't noticed because he sounded good. He sounded assured. He sounded like he knew what he was doing. So, to a certain extent, I wasn't paying attention, I guess. And that happens. And then, when the aircraft landed, he looks at the strip and goes, well, I guess I don't have to give the airspace back because I never got it. So once he said that, I'm like, well, that's a separation error. You never got the airspace. And so we talked about it after the run, after the scenario was over. And I said, dude, if you're in that situation, just give the airspace back. Pretend as if you got the airspace the first time. And on the strip, write it in and then line through it. Okay? Do the strip marking required. Because you never know. So, things like that happen. But you have to take the swing. You have to make the decision. I know in an earlier podcast I talked about one of the things that you can practice is practice making decisions. Practice making decisions. In the practice problems, they are just that. They are practice. Practice things. Yes, you want to get as much of it correct as possible. But I can tell you this, 100%, no person passed the academy because they got a perfect score on a practice scenario, either non-radar or radar. Yes, you want to be good at it. Yes, you want to run those scenarios well. You want to care about the scenarios. But they're practice. So practice things. So what else can I talk about? Oh, there are just so many things. Again, one of the reasons I do this podcast is getting to know the students at the academy, getting to know the students I worked with at Advanced ATC. I understand a little bit about where you guys are. You're at the very beginning of a career that I will tell you is the best career in the world. You are trying to become an air traffic controller. You're trying to become something that no one has any clue what you were trying to do, unless they know a little bit about what it's actually about. I can tell you, I've had many, 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 many friends tell me there is no way they could do what I do. I've had friends of my wife walk into the center and just look around in awe at how it looked like a spaceship. And of course, this was the new control room, not the old control room. But I looked at her when she said that and was like, really? Okay. Not really what I see when I walk in, but that's what the people on the outside, so to speak, that's what they see. They have no idea. We do tours in the tower that I work at now, and there's not a single tour, whether it's kids, whether it's older kids, whether it's adults, they come up and they're just in awe at what we do. And it's not a real busy airport, but they're in awe of what we do. And you may be thinking at the academy, or even at advanced ATC, or any of the CTI schools, you may be thinking, well, I'm not there yet. Well, I will guarantee you, especially if you're at a CTI school that's going to give you a control tower operator card at the end of it, and if you're advanced ATC, yeah, you need some more real-life traffic and live traffic to work to really get comfortable being an air traffic controller. But I will guarantee you, and those of you at the academy, I will guarantee you, by the time you get to those 11s and 12s in the radar lab, you are an air traffic controller. Whether you pass or don't pass, you have become, over those last 3 months, an air traffic controller. And don't let anyone take that away from you. Now, if you pass, now you get the second leg of the journey. It's not over yet. Now you get to train and train on live traffic. It's different. It's different. The failure rate at the centers is not nearly as bad as it was when I was going through. The failure rate, not the pass rate, the failure rate was 60%. And that was after you, the failure rate at the academy was 60%. The failure rate, not the pass rate. The pass rate today is 60 to 70%. The pass rate at most of the centers, the checkout rate is, I want to say most of them are 70%+. There are very few facilities that are still in the 50 to 60% range as far as pass rate. There are a few. But what you're trying to do, like I said, it's not easy. You have to, while you're at the academy, you have to focus on what the goal is. And the goal is not 70. Do never aim at 70. Aim for 95 to 100. Aim to get the highest score ever at the academy, which is around 98 point something. Aim for that so that you have some leeway. If you have 70 as your target and you're just a little bit off, well, that's not good. Okay? So, I was on the Discord chat for the academy about a week ago, and you know me, I like to talk, and so there was a lot of chatter on there about why concentrate on a test that's only worth, you know, the MAP test is only worth 2 points, the aircraft characteristics test is worth 4 points. You know, these tests are not worth that many points. And like I said earlier in this podcast, I've known students who passed, who passed by 2 points on their last eval. I've known students who had to be escorted out of the building because they missed it by 1 point on their last eval. They had a score of 69.9, but it's not 70. And the FAA looked and said, well, they got like a 75 on one of their tests, they got an 80 on one of their tests, they got an 88 on one of their tests. And when you do that, you don't really give the FAA a whole lot of reason to try and find that extra point. Because, you know, you should have done better on the tests. Well, the thing is about the academy and the way it's laid out, the timing of it. Yes, you're trying to learn a lot of information, but you're also, you're learning the MAP first. And then you have the CKT1. And you have your non-radar evals to concentrate on. right after that, you get your aircraft characteristics, and you get the CKT-2, as you're trying to learn the radar stuff. Then you get into the radar lab, and about two-thirds of the way through the radar lab, now you've got the checklist eval. And then a week and a half later, now you've got your radar evals. So you concentrate on each thing as it comes up. Focus on that while you're focusing on other things as well. So let's see if I can remember any more stories. There's the old story where a student called me Tim in a run. And then at the end of the scenario in the radar lab, realized my name wasn't Tim. And she goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, Tom." And I went, "No, that's okay. You can call me Tim." And then a few days later, I was walking down the hall. They were waiting to go into the lab. And she goes, "Hey, Tim." And one of the other students goes, "Wait a minute, isn't that Tom?" And she goes, "Not to me." And so there are all sorts of weird and funny stories. I've had a student who had his last radar eval in the C lab, which is not the great lab, but in the C lab, and he's not having a good run. According to him, he was not having a good run. And all of a sudden, the computer froze. And so the student is really, really upset. And the lead and I saw him in the hall, and we were like, "Okay, what happened?" Well, the computer froze. They haven't decided if they're gonna have to run the whole problem or not. He said, "I'm not having a good run," you know. And so I told him, I said, "Go take a walk outside. Don't go very far, but just walk around, cool off, and come back in." And he did. And they had him run the entire problem again. He did much better and ended up passing very easily. So, you know, it's one thing that the instructors are there for, is just to kind of not necessarily hold your hand, but be there when you need them. I know I talked in another podcast about talking some students off a ledge, and you know, really that's almost my major role as the lead or the A lead. You know, we give you a lot of information, but one of the things we're there for is to just keep you from getting too emotional one way or another, either up or down. And just trying to be there for you. And that's, you know, it can be a wonderful place to be as far as being that person. I can remember several instances where I've had conversations with students that, you know, I would like to believe changed the trajectory they were on. Unfortunately, I've seen some students who just weren't able to deal with the academy and left. Fortunately, I haven't seen too many leave after starting at the academy. When I went through the academy, back in the dark ages, 1988, we had a student who left before we got finished. She didn't want to be a controller. She wanted to be a controller's wife. She didn't want to be a controller. But one thing that I get struck by, like I've said over and over, is just how difficult the whole academy process is, how draining emotionally, physically, mentally it can be, which is why, again, it's so important that you get help You get help from your classmates. You band together. Become a band of brothers and sisters. You're going to go through moments of hell. You are. Every class does. Just about every student does. Even the best students have had their moments of self-doubt during that process. It is part of the experience of the academy, but you have to have support there to lift you up and reassure you that you are going to make it and that you can make it. And so hopefully that's a little bit of what I've been able to do today. Hopefully you didn't decide that you wanted to switch this off about half an hour ago. But if you're still listening, oh, I appreciate it. And again, I hope you're getting some good stuff out of it. But I would encourage you, whether you're at any of the CTI schools, whether you're at Advanced ATC, whether you're at the Academy, whether you are in a foreign country trying to get through the system in your country and become an air traffic controller in your country, wherever you are, at whatever point you are, if you're a trainee in your first facility or your fifth facility, don't give up. Hang in there. You're going to have rough days. You're going to have great days. I would tell a story to my classes about I have worked sectors that were amazingly busy, and yet it worked out so well. And I went on break and I left that control room believing that I was the best controller in all the world. There could not be anyone better than I was. And I would take a 40-minute break. And then I would go back in to the specialty. And I would sit down at a sector that had very little going on. And I couldn't separate two airplanes if I had to. I couldn't do anything right. And I would struggle. And I would go on break and I'd walk out of the control room and I'd go, you know, I might as well just walk into the boss's office and quit because I'm horrible. Well, I will tell you, I'm not the best controller in the world, but I'm also not horrible. I'm a pretty good controller. And I was a pretty good instructor. And I had days, good and bad, at the academy. You are going to have good and bad days. It's just a fact of life. And air traffic control is not different. Okay? So, hang in there. Keep studying. Keep being together as a class. And you can make this. You can do this. And you can become, to borrow a phrase from the Marines, one of the few and the proud. The ones that get to talk on the air to pilots and tell pilots what you need them to do. Okay? So, on that note, thank you again so much for listening. If you could, just continue to hit follow. Give us a rating. Even a 1-star rating, if you think I'm horrible, just throw that out there. But I want to thank you so much for listening. Thank you for continuing to listen to these podcasts. I enjoy doing them. I've enjoyed doing this for just over, I guess, maybe 6 weeks, maybe. It's been a blast. I hope you guys are getting some stuff, some good stuff from it. But thank you so much. And again, you can email me. I'll put my email in the notes. You can follow, hit like, send it to someone you know who you think wants to hear it or needs to hear it. And we'll meet up again in just a few days. Until then, thank you again and goodbye.